Emily was exhausted, bone tired. It had been a long week at work. Management had been giving her a hard time recently. She was ready for the weekend. As her car bumped up over the curb and onto the driveway outside her house, she thought about the bottle of wine waiting for her in the fridge, a couple of glasses, and a Friday night movie on television. That was what she needed. Emily parked the car and climbed stiffly out. She noticed the garage door was open, her husband Mark's own vehicle visible inside. Odd for him to be back before her. He should still be fighting his way through rush hour traffic on the other side of town. Emily fished around in her bag, trying to locate her house keys. She glanced down. A pair of polished black shoes sat neatly beside the welcome mat. Mark's shoes, no doubt about it, but so clean and left outside. He usually kicked off his scuffed footwear the second he got home from work, leaving them scattered about in the hallway, much to Emily's annoyance. Home early and being tidy. Something was definitely wrong here. Was it their anniversary or something? Had she forgotten? Emily opened the door and stepped inside. She could smell cooking, the rich scents of garlic and warm butter and something else. A clinical, sterile kind of odor, like that of a hospital ward, almost masked beneath the smells wafting from the kitchen. The skin on the back of Emily's neck prickled. She was scared, but she couldn't say why. It didn't make any sense. What possible thing was there to be afraid of in her own home? She was being ridiculous, wasn't she? The Body Snatchers, a bite-sized fright. This series contains disturbing content. Listener discretion is advised. Someone called out from the kitchen. Emily, is that you? It was Mark, for certain she would know that voice anywhere. But Emily just couldn't shake the odd sense of dread that was stealing up her spine, like a creeping spider. She walked slowly into the kitchen. Mark stood with his back to her, slicing mushrooms with a large knife. He turned as she entered. Oh, good, he said, grinning broadly. You're back. I hope you're hungry. Dinner's almost ready. Emily stared at him. She felt sick. Something was not right here, not right at all. Who are you? She said in a small, shaking voice. Mark laughed. What do you mean? Are you feeling all right? You look pale. Who are you? Emily asked again, louder this time, anger rising to match the fear that was coursing through her body. I'm me, Mark. Who else would I be? Only that wasn't true, Emily thought. He looked like Mark, the same kind, freckled face, same glasses, the same hair neatly parted to the side as always. But it was not Mark. They had been together for 12 years. She knew her husband better than anybody, and the man standing in front of her was not him. Emily didn't know how she knew, but she was certain of it. Perhaps it was the way he was grinning at her. A frozen, lopsided smile that was somehow innocent and terrifying at the same time. Get out of my house, now! Emily balled her hands into fists to try to stop them trembling. Mark shook his head slowly, smiling condescendingly at her as though she was a small, unruly child. The knife gleamed in his fist. Now, Emily, I think you need to calm down. You've had a busy day. You must be tired. He slid a wine glass to her across the kitchen table. It was filled with a dark, red liquid, the color of old blood. Would you like a drink? He asked, still grinning. Emily snatched the glass from his hand and hurled it across the room. It just missed Mark's head and exploded on the kitchen wall, showering them both in bloody droplets. Oh dear, Mark said, his voice calm, almost monotonous. Look what you've done now. He took a step towards her around the table, one arm outstretched. Emily fled. She made a dash for the kitchen door, but strong fingers suddenly seized the collar of her jacket and dragged her backwards. She screamed and twisted her head around. Mark was still grinning vacantly down at her. "Where are you going, Emily? You need to calm down. I'm your husband. I would never hurt you." Emily lunged forwards. There was a loud ripping sound as the fabric of her jacket tore, and suddenly she was free, sprinting towards the front door. She heard Mark's heavy footsteps following close behind. Emily wrenched open the door and ran out onto the driveway. She was screaming, yelling for help, but the streets seemed to be utterly deserted. For a few precious moments, Emily stood frozen, unsure which way to flee. Then she realized she was still clutching her car keys, so tightly they had left deep marks in the palm of her hand. She ran to the vehicle, desperately mashing the unlock button. She tugged the door open and hurled herself inside, slamming it closed behind her. A second later, Mark crashed into the side of the car, knocking his glasses askew. He had a ragged piece of Emily's jacket clutched in one hand. The other still held the long knife. He tapped on the car window with the blade, still smiling like an indulgent father. "Open the door, Emily. What will the neighbors think of all this fuss? Let's go back inside and talk about this, shall we?" Emily stared at him through the glass. She didn't understand what was happening. Who was this imposter? This man who looked and sounded so much like her husband and yet was not him. A perfectly imperfect copy. Emily slammed the car into reverse and roared out of the driveway. She skidded out onto the street in a cloud of tire smoke and kept on driving, weaving drunkenly backwards between rows of parked cars and neatly mown lawns. She risked a glance back at her house. Mark was standing like a mannequin on the driveway, his face a blank, emotionless mask, watching her leave. There was a sudden crumpling crash of metal on metal, and Emily was thrown violently against the steering wheel. She twisted to look back over her shoulder. She had been so transfixed by Mark's passionless stare that she had reversed into a parked car. Its alarm was blaring, ringing painfully loud in her ears. She glanced back down the street and felt her heart lurch in fear. Mark had left the driveway. He was running towards her, face as blank and still as a china doll's, while his arms and legs pumped mechanically. The knife in his hand flashed crimson in the light of the setting sun. Emily slammed the car into gear and pressed her foot flat on the accelerator. With a squeal of tires and a wrenching of twisted metal, the vehicle shot forward, hurtling towards Mark. He didn't break stride. He kept on running, moving with odd, almost robotic motions. The distance between them shrank rapidly. Emily's knuckles bulged white under her skin as she clutched the steering wheel. "He isn't going to move," she thought to herself. She was almost on top of him now. In half a second, she would hit him, send him tumbling over the roof of the car like a broken, bloody rag doll. She was close enough to see his eyes. Those dark brown eyes that usually regarded her with love and affection but were now cold, empty as freshly dug graves. Emily wrenched the steering wheel sideways. Her car mounted the curb, bounced across a patch of lawn in a shower of loose soil and grass before slamming into a fire hydrant with a bone-shaking crunch. The airbags exploded in Emily's face, snapping her head violently backwards. She had no time to assess her injuries. She tore open the car door and tumbled out onto the sidewalk. Water sprayed from the buckled hydrant in an icy fountain, soaking her to the skin almost instantly. She tried to stand, but her legs would not respond, so she began to crawl, dragging her useless limbs behind her. People were beginning to emerge from the surrounding houses, drawn by the shrieking car alarms. Emily felt a surge of relief wash through her body. Help, at last. An elderly woman was crossing the lawn closest to her, hurrying along with brisk, efficient little steps. Emily reached out a bloody hand for assistance, then froze. The old woman was grinning. A vague, lopsided smile split her wrinkled face. Emily glanced wildly around. A loose circle of people had formed around her, slowly closing in, all smiling dreamily down at her. She recognized them all as her friends and neighbors, but knew that she had never met any of these people before. She tried to crawl away, digging her fingers into the grass, but they shuffled closer. blocking her escape. A few of them bent down, flipping Emily onto her back and pinning her limbs to the ground. She screamed in pain as strong, merciless hands clamped onto her shattered legs. She squirmed and writhed, trying to lash out, to bite. Then Mark was suddenly above her, blocking out the clouds that were now stained bloody with the dying sun. He smiled warmly down at her, face serene and smooth as a marble statue. "Don't worry, dear," he soothed, raising the knife high above his head. "You'll be one of us soon enough." In 1978, cinema audiences around the world spooked themselves by watching The Invasion of the Body Snatchers, a disturbing remake of the 1956 science fiction horror classic. In the movie, a race of gelatinous alien beings descends upon Earth in secret. They have the horrifying ability to create perfect replicas of living humans, identical to the original in every way, but wholly devoid of emotion. These unearthly copies murder their human counterparts while they sleep, dispose of the bodies and take their place, with the aim of gradually replacing all humanity. If they find a human which has not yet been assimilated, these alien replicas emit a hideous, unnatural shriek, pointing with bulging eyes and gaping mouths in a terrifying stance, for which the movie became infamous. This chilling notion of friends and loved ones being replaced by monstrous duplicates was followed up in 1982 with the cinematic release of John Carpenter's The Thing. In this case, a group of research scientists working in Antarctica fight for survival against a hideous, parasitic extraterrestrial accidentally released from beneath the ice. This thing assimilates the scientists one by one, disguising itself as perfect, indistinguishable copies of its victims, identical down to their memories and mannerisms. And while examples of these body snatchers exist in numerous other films, television shows, and books, the concept is not a modern one. Many cultures around the world have stories about dark copies of people going back centuries, if not longer. These evil mirror images of ourselves are often referred to as doppelgangers, or ghost walkers. In some legends, meeting your own doppelganger is a sure sign of an impending, terrible disaster, usually your death. It is rumored that President Abraham Lincoln himself saw his own eerie double, standing ghastly and pale behind him when he looked into a mirror. He was assassinated 42 days into his second term in office. Russian Empress Catherine the Great died shortly after claiming to have seen her own ghostly twin sitting on her throne. In other legends, these so-called doppelgangers will follow you around, invisible to all but you, trying to plant sinister, spiteful ideas in your mind, or whispering malicious advice to lead you to your doom. Depending on the story, these doppelgangers may be twisted echoes of our own personalities, escaped from some hellish parallel world to steal your own, more comfortable life. They often cast no shadow, and will not have a reflection in a mirror or water. It is from these ancient legends that we get the evil twin trope that is now so common in works of horror and science fiction. In Norse mythology, such disturbing doubles are called Vardurgr. They are supposedly ghostly replicas of you who lived before you did. They can be characterized by a sort of reverse déjà vu, where friends and family members will swear they heard your voice or footsteps in a room before you actually arrived, or that they saw or even spoke to you in a place you could not possibly have been at the time. In European folklore, there are stories of babies being stolen away at birth by spirits, trolls, fairies, or other supernatural creatures, only to be replaced with identical, yet inhuman replicas. The real babies were taken to be devoured, or offered to hell as a sacrifice, or simply to live amongst whichever beasts had taken them, in exchange for their own sickly offspring. The replacement children, often referred to as changelings, would usually appear normal at first, but as they grew would become deformed, poor attempt to imitate human life. While this may sound like superstitious nonsense, many people strongly believed in these stories, and infants suspected of being changelings were often abused or even murdered. In Ireland in 1895, a woman called Bridget Cleary was burned to death by her husband. He claimed to have committed no crime, as Bridget was a changeling, and that by setting her alight, his real wife would be returned to him by the fairies. For most of us, stories of sinister doppelgangers and identical imposters infiltrating our society are just that. Stories. Myths and legends passed down through the centuries or brought to life on the silver screen. But for some people, it is all horrifyingly real. Capgras delusion is a rare psychiatric disorder. It causes those suffering from it to believe that a friend or family member has been replaced by an identical replica. Often they are convinced that these imposters have malicious intentions, and the doubles can be real people, aliens, or sometimes even robots cloaked in human flesh. The delusion gets its name from French psychiatrist Joseph Capgras, who, in 1923, described a case involving a woman sometimes referred to as Madame Macabre. She reportedly believed that her husband had been replaced by a man who looked just like him, and that over the years that followed, she had seen over 80 different imposters. It was not just her husband. She claimed her children too had been abducted, and identical doppelgangers left in their place. Similar to Capgras, sufferers of the Fregoli delusion believe that they are being followed by a single person who can change their appearance or disguise themselves as other people. This is usually coupled with the paranoia that this shape-shifting individual is stalking them with evil intentions. The first recorded case of this delusion is from 1927, in which a young woman became convinced that she was being pursued by two actors she had frequently seen at the theater. These people followed her closely, disguised as friends and family and people that she met, whilst influencing her to commit odd acts that she would never normally have even considered. The syndrome of subjective doubles is stranger still. Sufferers of this delusion believe that they have a doppelganger, identical to them physically, but usually their opposite in terms of personality or character. The face of this double can be projected onto anybody, from friends to total strangers, so it seems as though they are being constantly followed by an eerie replica of themselves. In one case, a woman believed that a perfect clone of herself was trying to steal away her husband's affections. She claimed that her own fingertips had become smoother, and that this sinister double must have taken her fingerprints to complete the illusion. These conditions are, thankfully, extremely rare. But there can surely be few things more terrifying or upsetting than truly believing you or your loved ones have been replaced by some odd, identical stranger. The horror and paranoia can only be strengthened as everyone around you insists that you are mistaken, that there is no insidious plot to infiltrate your family. Isn't that exactly what a sinister imposter would say, to keep themselves and their motives hidden? Whatever the supernatural, scientific or psychological origins may be, the idea of the existence of these eerie doppelgangers is deeply embedded in cultures around the world. It has been suggested that any sighting of yours or a loved one's identical double could be proof of a parallel universe, an exact mirror image of our own. Perhaps there are places where the gap between these two worlds is thin enough to allow us to catch a glimpse of the other side and come face to face with ourselves. What do you think? Would these parallel personas be our opposites, evil imposters hell-bent on usurping our lives? What would you do if you met yourself as you walked home alone on a dark night? Is any talk of such creepy clones just our brains playing tricks on us, subconscious fears borrowed from science fiction movies or distilled from disturbing legends and cautionary tales passed down through the centuries? Perhaps, deep down, we are all afraid of losing what makes us truly ourselves. For if you are not the only you, how can you be sure that anything around you is truly as it seems. We would love to hear your own thoughts and ideas about these baffling body snatchers. If you have enjoyed this episode, please follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Pixel Elixir, or subscribe at BitesizedFrights.com so that you never miss any of our terrifying tales. This has been a Pixel Elixir production, narrated by Chris Kay. Thank you for listening. Until the next bite, my friends.